when I think of how I schedule, like, my work schedule, my school schedule, being able to do music amidst it is kind of how I base everything.
I would step down my standard of living to be able to do this for a living.
You know what they say? Sometimes you gotta pay the cost to be the boss. I'm Mike Moschetto. This is Selling Out. I'm a casino that pays nothing when you win. Please put your money in. Hello. You're listening to Selling Out, a podcast about music and money, where DIY stands for dividends, interest, and I can't think of a third thing. I'm Mike Moschetto. Thanks for joining me again. Been a minute. I'm just going to start saying that this show is released on a semi-annual schedule. Maybe that'll take some of the production pressure off me. But I'm glad to be back, and this episode is a bit of a first in that it's the first time that a band has requested specifically to be on the show. That's right, if you're a musician with a new release on the way and you want to come on Selling Out to promote it, get at me, dog. You know, I don't want to overpromise or underdeliver here, but you may reach up to several new listeners. Anyway, my guests today are KZ Staska and Aki McCullough, vocalist and guitarist, respectively, of the band Dreamwell, an up-and-coming screamo band from Rhode Island, southern Massachusetts, that area. Their debut album, Modern Grotesque, is out this week, this Friday, February 26th. And boy, it sounds like it was quite a gauntlet for them to even get to this point. As you may have come to expect for an album being released at this time in human history, production was, of course, stalled by the continuing saga of the coronavirus pandemic. But as if a world historical, once-in-a-generation virus weren't enough of a hurdle, they also had a bit of an acrimonious divorce from the label that was supposed to be putting out the album just over a week prior to its release. In fact, they allege that the label had not adequately submitted the record for digital distribution via all the usual channels like Spotify, Apple Music, etc. So they have opted to submit it themselves independently on a wing and a prayer that it will actually be available by that February 26th start date. You know, thank goodness for Bandcamp sometimes, huh? Now, I'm not sure if I've stated this explicitly on the podcast before, but one of my goals in making this show, in producing this show, is to prompt you, the listener, and I presume appreciator of music, to reevaluate your relationship to the artists that you love, to encourage you to dig deep, to put your money where your mouth is, and show that art has value to you, actual dollars and cents value, not just the sentimental kind, although that's obviously good in the absence of anything else. In this society where class relations have been flattened and obscured, where the average person is kept at arm's length from, you know, meaningfully changing their political and economic conditions, where we're defined not by our beliefs or convictions, but ultimately by our choices as individual, atomized consumers, you could do a lot worse than to spend your hard-earned money supporting a young, hungry band. And that is especially true when this young, hungry band finds themselves releasing their first full-length album, a big moment for any band, on an independent basis, especially having had the rug pulled out from under them like this. Now, I always say this at the end of every episode, but I will preface with it today. If you, at any point, enjoy what you hear on the podcast, if you appreciate the snippets of music in between, or if you find the conversation itself compelling, I urge you to support Dreamwell and the many Dreamwells of the world using the links in the description of this episode. Pre-order their record on Bandcamp. It's really fucking good. They wouldn't be on here if it weren't. Buy their merch. Tell your friends that you think would like them. And with all that, here's my conversation with KZ and Aki from Dreamwell.
Yeah! So the last time I was doing this regularly, I was asking people how life under quarantine has been. And I think after, you know, 11 months, I think we're all pretty tired of that. So, but
it's bad.
It's yeah, exactly. suspense is over. But KZ, you actually contracted COVID.
Yeah, your boy got COVID.
How are you feeling now?
Now I'm feeling pretty good. It did affect my voice, my vocals for a little bit after I got better. And it also affected like sort of my lung capacity and my breathing for a little bit. But now those things are mostly over. My breathing is totally fine. My vocals are kind of back to normal. My stamina is still a little bit short, but
Talk about unintended consequences. Like talk about being more than just a flu. Over the course of the pandemic, though, you were able to actually finish up the new record, right? How much of production took place within all of the madness?
We got two sessions. Yeah. We got, or did we get three? I know we got drums done.
We
got bass and Ryan's guitars done before the lockdown hit. And then it was like, I think the day before either you or I were supposed to track is when the lockdown went into place. So that's it caught us in like the last legs of the recording progress.
We've run into so many roadblocks.
It's cursed.
Yeah. It was kind of the thing where like we had those 4 weeks lined up for March and like we knew something was going to happen because the album's cursed. Like it wasn't just going to be done at the end of March. That was like too easy.
I mean, things rarely go according to plan, public health emergency or not.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another fun thing is Anthony, our drummer, he's an electrician. He actually had an injury at work where he basically got a stab wound to the leg the week before you're supposed to drum.
Jesus.
So he could barely walk. He was like taking like 5 minutes to limp into the live room or the control room to like listen to the takes. But he killed it. He could drum.
That's good. I mean, yeah, I thought you were going to say he got zapped and like turned into a skeleton for a brief moment.
No, he's alive and well.
That's good. That's
so
good.
No tragic ending.
How long after that postponement did you resume?
Luckily, I happened to live in a studio. It was in a much less finished state than it is now. Now it's like we actually have people like recording with us, but it got to the point where like the beginning of April, it was pretty obvious that things weren't changing anytime soon. So our engineer, he knew I was like an engineer. So he basically said like, yeah, you should just go ahead and DI and mic your own guitars and just so we can keep making progress on this.
Okay.
And we finished, our last session was July 12th. So it was a good chunk of months between our first and our final one.
So, I mean, things felt pretty normal over the summer, I guess. So maybe there wasn't a whole lot of trepidation.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah, it was at least like we could get in there for a day and it didn't feel like we were totally risking our lives.
So you said that the studio hadn't really, your studio hadn't quite materialized into its current form. Is that something that was kind of spurred on by the pandemic?
Yeah, it actually kind of did because me and my roommate works at a guitar center, and I think we were some of the lucky ones who remained employed or making unemployment money, and we'd had extra money than we would have otherwise, and he was at home. So I think that helped, and also just because of the pandemic, there was a lot of change in the scene, so like bands breaking up, people making new bands, or people not able to play with their bands and doing solo recordings for the first time. That kind of gave us, it would have been hard to hit up an established band and be like, hey, you want to track with us? I know you don't know who we are, but it was a lot easier with people doing solo stuff for the first time and maybe not having as huge of a budget and also not having a full band. And so our model's kind of been like, we've been focusing a lot on drum session stuff. We basically have the drum kit and mics set up all the time, and James is a drummer. So we can do that really fast. And that's kind of been one of our focuses because so many people are just doing their own solo work right now.
For sure. So I know when I was in a cool screamo band, it came up pretty often whenever we needed to record. It was like, do we just do it ourselves because we had some knowledgeable engineering folks in the band? Or do we go somewhere else? Do we kind of spend some money and make something cool? So kind of talk me through the reasoning behind going to the Great Ryan Stack versus just doing it yourself.
Yeah, so we self-recorded our first album, and it was just kind of like a huge pain having to, at least for me, like do a lot of the creative side and also be in charge of recording and mixing it. And it's so psychologically draining to mix your own album. And we wanted to get an outside perspective. So it just made sense to take some of the pressure off. It is nice, though, because we were able to get really good pre-production on our own, which
totally
ends up being pretty important.
Now, COVID is still raging. Little relief in sight, obviously. So how has this, besides the obvious ways, how has this kind of affected your release plan?
If anything, it's put more pressure on the release promotion itself, because that's all we really have.
Yeah, we don't get to like go out and gig on it or anything like that, you know, obviously, because we're not like the worst band in the world who's insistent on playing shows. So it's really like it's forced us to consider our social media presence a lot more. So we're focusing a lot more on that than I think we ever have before, and trying to kind of generate sort of almost like auxiliary content around the record, which is something that I don't think we were thinking a ton about before the pandemic hit. And now it's kind of our only option. So
what does that look like in terms of other promotional stuff? Like, I know there's a video in the works. Is that?
Yeah, we made a music video ourselves with our friend Jared Shoot over the summer. So that's going to come out after the record. But, you know, also just like having each of us kind of do various kind of like performance run throughs of songs and stuff like that has been part of the game plan. Reaching out more to blogs and, you know, whatever podcasts to talk about it, stuff like that, than we probably would have otherwise. Stuff like that. Just trying to generate things to put on the internet so that we can stay talking about the record without just repeating ourselves over and over again, basically.
For sure. And I mean, let's say, just for the sake of example, let's say that COVID disappears tomorrow, like a miracle, as a great man once said.
Right.
And let's also say that once the record's out, it's burning up the charts and you're trying to ride that wave and starting to hit the road for a couple of weeks at a time.
A bigger miracle.
an even bigger miracle. How do you think your respective job situations would accommodate your newfound buzz? Let's talk about what kind of funds this activity.
I have a shitload of paid time off saved up, so I'm ready to tour like overnight, basically. I'm good to go. I'm ready. I'm ready for it. I have like 3 weeks paid. I'm good. I'm set.
That's what's up. And this is through Whole Foods?
Oh, yeah. Big grocery store hours over here.
So shall I refer to you as the Jeff Bezos-backed screamo band, Dreamwell?
Yeah, our video, we haven't announced this yet, but this is, I guess this is where we'll do it. Our video is premiering on Amazon Prime Video, so.
Oh, Aki, what about you? What's the work life like?
So I do like software engineering for a I work in automotive. So just like doing code for making sure the cars sound good. Basically, there's just a lot of like alignment in the phase and frequency response. They actually have people sitting in the cars for every new model year of the cars just because the dimensions change.
Wow.
It's cool in that it's connected to its adjacent audio, and I kind of get to hear the results of that. But I'm also not using my ears like every day, like the people who are actually doing the tunings, because I think that would be really hard for me to get off of work and mix or be in a band after having sat in a car and mixed for 8 hours. So
take it from me. Yeah. I mean, I sit and I look at Pro Tools all day and I listen to people talk, and then I come home and like the idea of more staring at Pro Tools is it's a lot. So have you been able to work from home then, or?
Yeah, I've been working from home since March, and they said we're not going back until at least June. So I feel lucky to have that. It might be days to weeks that I don't see people in person sometimes, but it's better than having to be out in the world right now and exposed. So,
and I would assume, now maybe I'm wrong, but I would assume that a company like would have some nice little bennies.
Yeah, we have vacation. We have a healthcare plan. We used to have like fun stuff in person, like events and stuff, but not much of that anymore.
But you could pick up and hit the road for at least a couple weeks at a time if you needed to, once things are shipshape.
Yeah, I have some vacation saved up, so I could get time off. As for the rest of our bandmates...
Ryan and Anthony are both electricians, so they don't get any like vacation time, but they do, because they're, I believe they're both union, they do both get to like just kind of take time off when they want to and not have to worry about losing their jobs or anything like that. So they can hightail it when they need to, but they don't get paid when they're gone. So
that was me as a postman. So
right.
I never really pushed it to see how long I could take off without totally losing my job entirely, but at least up to a month was good. So
I give Anthony hypotheticals like, okay, say that we're touring in Asia. Can you do 2 weeks? Can you do 3 weeks? Like, how long are you willing to step away from your job?
Oh, I mean, you got to factor in like 3 days of travel on either side of that, too.
Right. Yeah.
He also has parental responsibilities. So,
ooh, that's tougher.
Props to him for balancing all of that.
That's a little more non-negotiable.
Mm.
Now, Screamo is not like the most, let's say, lucrative of the music genres you could put your time into. But
why am I just finding this out now?
I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but is it something that you could see like putting other life stuff on hold to really pursue if things were going well, or is it just like a nice like hobby? To what degree is it kind of like a professional aspiration?
This is like kind of all I want to do in kind of any capacity. So this would, I think, kind of be priority over anything else. Like when I think of how I schedule, like my work schedule, my school schedule, stuff like that, it's like being able to do music amidst it is kind of how I base everything and plan everything. So I would definitely prioritize stuff like this.
If my employer is listening, no, I would never quit my job to go on tour as a screamo band. So you can stop listening now. Okay, but yeah, if someone
you were
wants to give us
that whole time, you couldn't stop.
If someone wants to give us like hundreds of thousands of dollars to be a screamo band, I'll take it.
The hot topic route.
I'll take enough to afford like a mediocre apartment. Honestly, yeah. Like that's fine.
I would step down my standard of living to be able to do this for a living. I do enjoy mixing and recording. I feel like neither that nor being a band would be able to sustain myself on its own, but ideally together, maybe someday.
I found when I was both in a cool screamo band and also like a recording engineer, the two like really fed into each other. Like money flowed into one and then out the other.
Right.
Kind of, but like in a weird like human centipede of cash flow. Not great. But you know, not being in a band and trying to get recording work in the last 4 or 5 years now, it's hard. So there's something to be said for the value add.
Yeah, it's like most of the people I work with in the studio know us through Dreamwall stuff, so it definitely helps to be active in that way.
Hold up a tweet of yours, Matthew, from... it's fine.
This is where she gets canceled.
Is this accountability?
No. I don't know. It depends. Maybe unless your bosses are listening. But no, it struck a chord and it says, I actively have to deprogram my music from capitalism every couple months or I'm unable to keep making it at all. And then the reply, I'm sure it is why no matter what I do, I still never have that feeling I had making music when I was like 18 to 20. God damn. Where's that coming from? What was the genesis of this feeling? Or what made you realize it, I guess? Because it's kind of there. Did you read like any particular books or, you know, I mean, 19th century German philosophers?
I'm all about it. I don't really have the attention span to get through a lot of literature like that. I start reading Capitalist Realism. I can't remember who it's by, but that was a good one.
It's Mark Fisher, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I pitched that to my book group and it did not, it didn't take.
But yeah, I think it's more just putting a name to the feeling a lot of us feel. I think in music, there's a lot of pressure to be creating for other people, and that like you need to be somebody, you need to be the best at what you're doing. You need to be like well-respected, top of the charts. I mean, even in like DIY music, like there is scene clout and stuff like that. And like, that's not really totally decoupled from that like capitalist mentality of needing to like climb the ladder. And it's like, you're in that for long enough and it starts to kind of pollute the mentality you're going into music with. When you're just like a teenager and this like, I mean, like I wasn't really in like the music scene back then. So I was just kind of like messing around and like on my guitar and stuff. And I feel like that was like the most like purely I've had fun doing it, because I mean, I still like had those dreams of like being on a stage or something, but it was so far out of reach and I didn't have like any sort of reception to what I was doing that I felt like the music I was making wasn't really polluted by those expectations. And now it's like, whatever we create, somebody's listening. We have to be better than our last album. We have to get more listeners than our last album. It takes active energy to kind of like tune all of that noise out and really focus in on being in that moment and enjoying ourselves and writing what we want to hear.
A huge part of it is kind of the social media game of trying to promote yourself. It's not so much the writing, because I've always found that I want to kind of one-up myself in terms of like making something that, I don't know, there's all kinds of ways to rationalize it, right? Like something that more deeply reaches in and pulls what I'm feeling and tries to, you know, make it into a little piece of music, right? So in terms of trying to get more listeners than the last thing, like it's really dispiriting when it doesn't happen, right? Like that's the thing I'm up against. It's hard. It's like a poison pill to kind of think about it this way, because like you're not really doing anything different and you might not even have different goals, but suddenly it just feels like mediated through this whole commodification process.
Yeah, I've kind of noticed that too, is that unless you're changing something about what you're doing and like finding some new kind of, I don't know if like gimmick is too judgmental of a word, but like if you just keep doing what you're doing and kind of writing the same type of music and enjoying yourself with it, it seems like people start tuning out. It's like you actively have to be engaging their attention, and maybe that's not what everyone's always trying to do. Like maybe we're just trying to keep doing the same thing.
Yeah, and it's certainly easy to get in your own head about this stuff, especially now where still huge swaths of the music industry are still shut down, and all you really have to go on is this cheap, you know, simulacrum of actual community, this atomized, you know, gamified social media ecosystem and environment.
I feel like it's hard to almost think about right now, like anything other than just like, how are we going to, you know, do this thing in the current state? And when are we going to be able to like have the full experience of being a band again? You know,
that's huge too, because like, A, how do you plan for that in the abstract? Because, you know, you got to get on the road sometime, but we don't know when that's going to be. And B, like, do you make plans and then have them fall through? Or do you just kind of wait it out? And like, if by waiting out, are you kind of like on the coattails of like everyone else who kind of got a jump on it? And I don't know, it's just a huge guessing game.
Right. Yeah, it's hard. It's like it's hard to picture what like the music scene is going to look like when we can return to it, for a lot of reasons. You know, smaller venues kind of having to shut down obviously has a dramatic impact on just the pool of places that you can book. I would imagine every band that hasn't just tabled themselves is going to be really eager to return to it, you know? So it's like, are we going to return to like the early 2000s or 2010s era of like eight band mixed bills, you know? I hope not, but it's like, it's hard to even imagine trying to like book a show, you know, without having to like, I don't know, cut too much of like who's trying to play this thing.
Yeah, and like acknowledge that maybe this thing we're doing is risky behavior.
No.
So. Yeah, that's true too.
No, but I think there was some kind of supposition that maybe audiences would have an increased, because I don't know what your experience with live music was, but like the longer I played shows, the fewer people I noticed coming out, because there's just more distraction, I think. Like when I was a kid and when I was in high school, it was like that was the thing to do. And now it's just like you're lucky if you can get like 15 people out on a good night. And
yeah,
bro, why go to a show when Code Orange is live streaming shit, you know, like every weekend?
Don't get me started.
I've seen like a lot of my friends who are just like, I'm never skipping a show again that I want to go to. Like, I'm never leaving the show early.
Yeah, but wait till it's an 8-band bill and see how they respond. Like, yeah,
yeah, those people, I have a hard time believing those people aren't just the, you know, the same people who like check interested on the MySpace or the Facebook event page. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's tough.
Well, I'll definitely be at the next one. It's the same energy.
How long before you think there's like an article about like the house show as a super spreader event?
I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet. I guess because most of the people who are playing the music we tend to play at least have the level of empathy to not have a house show right now.
It could be that, or it could be that the mainstream media just doesn't want to touch this DIY crap.
I mean, house shows have always been a super spreader event. It's just a question of what.
Mm-hmm. Super spreader of bad music.
Well, thank you both for doing this.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Is there anything that I missed? Anything that you wanted to bring up that I didn't already touch upon in some way?
I guess as a trans woman who's doing a thing not many trans women do, or I mean, there's not very many of us in general. I guess I don't really know what exactly to say besides being gay is cool.
There must be like a greater sense of camaraderie within this scene of other trans musicians.
Mm-hmm.
Once you find them, I guess.
Yeah. Locally, I haven't like met a whole lot of people who aren't cis like in the local music scene. I mean, there's a few people, but
that's what touring is for, I guess, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
All the more reason.
Yeah. So when there's no more pandemic, you know, if you're in a at least partly trans band, hit us up so that we can do an all trans tour.
Revenge tour.
Hell yeah. I'm interested to see how that changes when we're able to play shows again, just because I've never been able to like publicly exist as a queer person before. So maybe we'll end up meeting more bands like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just on the upswing anyway. I think more people are feeling more mm-hmm. comfortable. And at least some segment of polite society is becoming more, you know, tolerant of, maybe that's not the right word, but you know what I mean? Like recognizing the humanity of mm-hmm. trans people, right? So I would expect by the time that shows are kind of like back to some semblance of normalcy, it'll be out there. It'll be on mm-hmm. Front Street for all to take in.
Yeah. And I think, I feel like it was a trope for so long that like emo and like screamo and all that was just like angry white guy music, kind of misogynistic. Even when we started, I feel like that was kind of how the scene was. But just in the last couple of years, I feel like it's changed so much, especially with like some of the heavier screamo bands that have been showing up in the scene. I think it's a lot more, there's just a lot more queer musicians and a lot more like overtly like leftist politics. And I think that's really cool because I don't think many people in bands are actually interested in hiding their politics and hiding their identity. It was necessary at one point and just make it about when music is more just about like personal relationships and stuff. But we're in a place like as a society, as a world, where it feels more urgent to at least have that in your music to some degree because it does seep into your everyday life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's part of your lived experience. When did, I mean, this is maybe not a great example, but I remember the first band that I was aware of that made it like a core part of their thing was that band Gloss.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When that happened, what year? Was that like 2014, 2015?
2014, 15,
yeah.
Yeah,
I was on Tumblr still, mm-hmm. so probably yeah. 2014
Weren't
or
we
so.
All, yeah.
They definitely, yeah, and they definitely faced a different environment for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know if it was more recent because I feel like the repeated kind of refrain of the Trump years was like, oh, there's going to be a lot of good, like, angry punk music now. But I do think, you know, you started to see more, you know, expressions of that kind of identity as a response to maybe the political mm-hmm. climate, just like, fuck it. Like, I'm out. Like, I'm, you know,
yeah,
right.
I'm me.
Like, anger has always been, like, a big part of, like, punk music and part of heavy music. And I think what was really cool about, like, Gloss is that they took that anger and that, like, I'm going to fight people and, like, made it about their personal experiences and, like, getting revenge on all the people who have, like, been shitty to them. That's definitely a prevalent emotion among trans people. Oh, I also, if we're talking about this, I also have to say fuck War.
Okay, sure.
Fuck that
sure.
band.
We're definitely more interested in you know, talking about sort of political issues. It's just, it feels fucking stupid not to, you know, the longer we exist. And, you know, the more we want to be open about who we are, I think the more important it is that we, you know, kind of combat the things that don't allow us to. And on the other end, you know, we're here trying to kind of signal the death of the dudes whining about ex-girlfriends era and show you that girls can also whine about their ex-girlfriends.
Again, the record is called Modern Grotesque. It's out this Friday, February 26th, 2021. If you liked what you heard, links are in the description of this episode, as always, in addition to the ever-growing Spotify playlist of songs featured in this show. If you want to get in touch with me, I'm at sellinoutpodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter at sellinout or on Instagram now at sellinoutpodcast. If you want to support the show for some reason with a financial contribution in any amount, you may do so at patreon.com/sellinoutpodcast. Of course, in this time of unprecedented economic uncertainty, I would appreciate it equally if you simply told a friend about the show or left a review and a rating on your podcast app of choice. It really does help us kind of game the system. Or you can just post about it on social media so everyone can just whiz by it. But you know, next time you're in a Zoom meeting, maybe you change the background to the show art. Who knows? That cover photo is by Nick DiNatale, theme music by Such Gold. I'm Mike Moschetto. Thanks for listening. See you next time, whenever that is.